Hi everyone. So now, before we move to the most important part of today, we've got just a few more things. I know I've been around and everyone's made some really good recommendations. And I hope you had some nice tea and flapjacks. But now we're going to give a warm welcome to Dr. Nicola Millard. She's a BT customer experience futurologist, right? And her job combines psychology with futurology to see what's laying around the corner for customers and organizations. So please give a warm welcome to Dr. Nicola Millard.
Hello everybody. My gosh, this is a rather posh room, isn't it? It's very rare that a room outshines my waistcoat. So good afternoon everyone, and happy Sunday. And what I'm going to do today is talk a little bit about what we're calling clouds, crowds and customers. I'm just trying to find me zapper. There we go. That's better. Now I know, because I am a futurologist, what on earth is just popping into your mind at the moment, which is probably, well, what the hell is a futurologist? Well, I have a crystal ball, but it doesn't work. Damn it, so I do have to work slightly harder for my living. I can't just read tea leaves. I do actually spend a lot of time just working with a lot of really interesting people generally and trying to figure out what on earth lies in the future. Now, I am a psychologist, so I tend to not do the gadget bit. A lot of the stuff that I do is looking at the impact of technology on behaviour and how we're all starting to change in terms of the behaviour that we actually are doing. So my role largely is to scare people, and I start by scaring me, by the way. So I spend a lot of time talking to business leaders across all sorts of big corporates to try and basically motivate them to change the way that they think. And sustainability is absolutely a very key part of the futurologist's role, because sustainability into the future is vital to get right. But I'm going to do broader than just sustainability today. Hence the title, Clouds, Crowds and Customers, Doing Business as Unusual. And actually, it's a really interesting time to be a futurologist at the moment, because there's lots of things that are happening that is making life a little bit more interesting in business. There's a ton of things going on, really, and certainly some of the things that I do in terms of painting visions of the future is to look at things that are influencing business and how look at how businesses need to change. So we've got things like a recession. Now that's an interesting piece of business as unusual, but in actual fact, business as unusual did start before the recession started. So we started to get different challenges in business, whether it be climate change, the fact that certainly 20% of the UK's population failed to make it into work on 2 days in January this year because they were snowed in. Damn it. They had to play snowballs and sledge and things like that instead of going to work. So that's a big challenge to business. Volcanic ash clouds, all that challenges business as unusual. And I think one of the things that tends to come out of the work that I've been doing is essentially if a Victorian person walked into today's offices, yes, they'd probably be a bit amazed about computers, but actually they probably recognise a lot of the things that we do, because a lot of technology, what we've actually done is we've applied technology to do things that we've always done. And actually business is unusual requires you to think very differently. So we've got Victorian offices essentially sitting on 21st century technology. How do we change things radically? And certainly that's where some of the role of some of you guys is to change thinking, because you're very much more comfortable with the technologies that's going on. So we've got things like that going on, global recession, unexpected stuff. We've also got a shift in customer behaviour, and I'm going to talk a lot more about that, and that's us, by the way. Hello, we're customers. We're not lab rats. I do study customers like lab rats sometimes, but how are we changing in the way that we interact with organisations? And that's a big impact, and we'll talk a little bit more as we go along about that. We've got a shift in infrastructure as well. We've got the lovely cloud computing, which when I talk to technologists is absolutely top of their list at the moment as to the kind of thing that we can change the way that we do business by centralizing, virtualizing virtual data centers. Certainly there's a big green message around things like that. But there's a behavior change consequence as well on moving from, I can see this in a room, to it's over there somewhere in a cloud. So again, changing business leaders' mindsets is quite difficult around things like cloud computing. And then we've got all this different collaboration behaviour that's going on. Social networking. Now, businesses often regard social networking as a time waster. Actually, my pet hate of the moment are businesses that recruit on Facebook and then ban Facebook as soon as you step through the door. You've just recruited a wonderful skill of a person that has got a job using a social network, and then you are banning them from using that technology and that skill. So again, how do we move all that around? What I actually have to do is take into account a number of things in terms of how does this get adopted into the future. And a prime example is the paperless office. Futurologists were predicting that probably by about 5 years ago, we would have no paper in our offices. Well, frankly, you can't see my desk for paper at the moment. And there's tons of it about. It's certainly still a papered office. Ecologically exceedingly unfriendly, and I try and recycle as much as I can, but actually there is evidence that we're using even more paper than we used to, because certainly we're printing our email out, we're printing maps, all that kind of thing requires a big behaviour change. And the other thing about paper, especially, is it doesn't crash. So I can rely on paper, it's there, it's not going to suddenly turn off halfway through a presentation. So paper actually does a really good job for me, so why should I change? So I've got to look at a number of aspects of the future in terms of predicting it, whether it be culture change, the technology itself, the politics, the environment, legalities, all those kind of things. And economics is a big, big driver, because at the moment we've got business leaders being challenged to do more for less. And that's where innovation can come in, creativity. We have an opportunity in recession. Traditionally, a lot of people innovate more in recessions than they do in any other era. So how do we innovate? How do we do business as unusual? Right, so we've got things like, well, we're evolving as customers for a start. We've changed fundamentally because of the internet. The internet has given us more choice than we've ever had before. And that's fantastic, but as the Hoosiers keep saying, stop giving me choices. I've got too many choices now. I've got what academics are now calling radical transparency. So you can compare prices, and we're very price sensitive as customers now. We can compare prices at the click of a button. We can compare products at the click of a button. We can look at sustainability issues at the click of a button. Ethicality. We have lots and lots of information at the tip of our fingers. The only trouble is that one critical component has not been updated, and that is, unfortunately, our brain. Our brain is pretty similar, it evolves a little, but you know, it's over the past 1,000 years, it's kind of a bit similar, always been. So things like my short-term memory capacity does not have Moore's Law applied to it, so I don't become progressively able to process more information year on year. I don't become progressively more intelligent year on year. Actually, I think on both of those counts, I'm in terminal decline at the moment. So one of the things we actually have to play towards is the capacity of our primitive brains. And also, our primitive brains are not logical either. We're kidding ourselves if we think we have a logical brain. We have an emotional brain. Case in point, anyone with an iPad will probably give me a logical answer as to why they bought an iPad, but actually it's just gorgeous, isn't it? So I want to stroke it, it's fantastic. So actually, we do operate on an emotional basis as well, so some of our decisions are made emotionally and then justified logically. And change in behaviour in terms certainly of things like sustainability is as much an emotional response as a logical one, because if everyone was logical, we'd be saving the planet as we speak. So we've got to think about all those things that customers are thinking about. But we've also got devices coming along as well. Oh, actually, I forgot. I've got to do demographics first. This is the scariest bit, actually, of my job. The fact that we have a big demographic shift going on at the moment. So again, one of the biggest things on a futurologist's radar is things like an aging population. So in 1917, George V actually only had to sign 24 100-year-old telegrams. Let's see how that's changed. In 2009, the Queen, bless her, had to sign over 9,000. But by 2033, she is going to be signing 64,200. She is going to have one hell of a case of writer's cramp. So we've got to think about that, and that's disturbingly. Nearly 5% of the UK's population is going to be 100 or over by then. Now, if that's a challenge for sustainability, I can't think of a better one, frankly. 5% of the population, it's great that we're living longer, we're healthier, but actually there's also other consequences of ageing that we need to think about. The fact that we probably are going to have declining mental faculties, Alzheimer's, dementia, big problem. We don't see as well. We don't hear as well. We're not as dexterous. And the thing is, with the technologies that are evolving today, and the iPad is just one of those technologies, it's all about manipulating air. So if you can't see much, how do you actually manipulate that kind of device? So you guys who are designing the technologies of the future need to think, how do I help someone who's over 100 to actually use technologies? They also need to think about sustainability. They also need to do things like recycling. How do we help them do that when they may not be as dexterous or be able to see as well as they could? So again, that's a big challenge that we're thinking about. We've also got, this is really interesting. We've not only got an aging population, we've also got two alien species growing up together. You guys, I'm sorry, I just called you an alien species. So you're the millennials. You're doing really interesting things. For one thing, you can multitask very naturally. I've had to learn how to do it. I'm Generation X, by the way. I always feel as if I should have my pants on over my trousers to be Generation X. But a lot of business leaders are baby boomers. They're over 50. Now think about it, over 50s, I'm not over 50 by the way, I might look it, but I got asked by a 14-year-old the other day a very sobering question, which was, what were PCs for before the internet? Well, they were glorified typewriters, I guess, but actually, you guys, I mean, you've grown up with Facebook, you probably can't imagine a world without Facebook now. Actually, when we look at business leaders, very few of them use social networks, oddly enough. In fact, a lot of them think that they're a waste of time. They're not. They're a new tool for collaboration. But in terms of selling the benefits of things like social networks, selling the benefits of changing the way that they do business, you need to think very carefully about the kind of mindset that they are in, because it's a very different mindset than the mindset that you have. And actually, I tend to scare business leaders by talking about you guys and the behaviours that you're doing. And they're kind of, oh my God, I know. Oh, why are they doing that? Or, oh, that's what my teenagers are doing at home. The prime example being that I keep saying that when I was young, I used to get sent to my room when I was naughty. Of course, now, that's not a good strategy, because generally, most teenagers want to be in their room. The ultimate punishment now is disconnection. So take away the mobile phone, take away the internet, and certainly a lot of 14-year-olds, which I have the most experience with, all their friends think they're dead. So we've got a problem there, that you've got different ways of upbringing. We were just talking in the break. We were taught, as older people, don't sit near the television. You know, we might break things. Technology was precious at that time. Whereas you guys just play with it and apply it. So there are very different sort of planets out there that we need to reconcile in order to get business change. Interestingly enough, companies like Cisco at the moment are doing reverse mentoring. So actually they are getting you guys to mentor their senior managers so that you can teach them how to use these different tools, how to get these different mindsets. And I think that's a really, really interesting way of developing business forward. Now, we've also got tons of stuff about technology. I'm teaching the converted here because you're probably using most of these devices more than I am. But certainly that's the mobile phone that we can see in about 3 years' time. It's infinitely connected, it's geographically aware. There's all sorts of stuff it can do, and certainly we're looking at things like bendable screens, the fact that you don't have to anymore squint at your BlackBerry. I love this in the morning. I can see everyone sort of in the train really trying to squinting at these tiny little screens that they've got. Certainly we've got things like projection technologies and flexible screens. That's going to hopefully cause my eyesight no big impact. But we've got the interesting stuff is not the device, in my opinion. It's what we're doing with the devices. And certainly smartphones are doing wonderful stuff because they're location-based. We're getting weird behaviours, not just the ability to find out where you are and where the nearest services are, and certainly again, in terms of green, you can certainly find things around in your locale, whereas maybe you would have travelled further before. You've got great stuff like Foursquare going on. I keep saying, is Foursquare the future of loyalty? The fact that you can check into locations and become the mayor of that location and then actually get benefits from being the mayor of that location. And by the way, I'm a mayor of quite a few Starbucks now and I'm starting to get benefits from that. So Foursquare brings together that social piece and the geographically aware piece. And behaviour change can be really powerful by using that kind of technology. We've also got all sorts of things like augmented reality coming out. So using the ability to use the camera on your phone to actually take photos or overlay information on that. Again, these kind of apps are already here. The strangest one are things like Google Goggles. So that's in beta at the moment. So the fact that you can take a photo of, oh, I've just seen a really nice dress. Okay, let's take a photo. And that's where I can buy it. So it does an image search back into Google. The disturbing thing about Google Goggles is it can do it potentially with faces as well. So if I take a photo of you, it could actually potentially bring up all the information about you that Google can find. You'll be relieved to know that's not in the beta version at the moment. But all these things have different applications that we can start thinking differently about these devices. How can we start to apply a lot of these strengths of these devices? How can we apply them to actually do business better? Other things that are going on, well, certainly in terms of new interfaces, there's tons of stuff. And the good news is that a lot of this is also very accessible. And certainly my mother, bless her, 72 years old, won't let a PC in the house, but beats me consistently at Wii bowling. I wish I'd never taught her now. So she loves the Wii because it's really intuitive. It doesn't require her to think this is a PC. We've certainly got things like Project Canvas coming out soon, which is essentially integrating the internet with the television. And people, again, are very comfortable with the television as a device, a technological device, rather than a PC. And then we've got cool stuff like the iPad and stuff like that coming along as well. So all these interfaces are giving us access, potentially, to different types of people. And again, the aging population come in here, because if you can get my mother to use a Wii, you can get anyone to use a Wii, frankly. So we've got all the technologies coming along. What does that mean for business? Where am I really targeting business at the moment? Well, certainly one of the things that we've been looking at is what I call the martini worker. So the fact that you can work anytime, any place, anywhere, through any device. Now, this may seem obvious to you, but it's often only, there actually are a number of companies that I'm working with at the moment that won't let their people work at home. That won't let people get access to information outside the office. Why? Well, there's interesting psychology behind that. Largely, they don't trust their employees. But we are certainly, and I was walking along the South Bank about a month ago, and it made me laugh that there were a number of people sitting on the grass verges in full suits with a laptop, sitting, working away, and I suspect a lot of them were IBMers, actually, but they can work anywhere. And the thing is, there are huge benefits for this, because you get a huge productivity hike. The problem is not starting people working, it's stopping people working. And certainly in environments like call centres, we're working a lot with call centres to actually get advisors to work from home at the moment. We get huge benefits from that because they can kind of clock on and clock off. We get micro shifts of 15 minutes. They can work 4 hours in the morning, 4 hours in the afternoon. It suits their work-life balance. We get great productivity. They also don't have to get into their car to go to work. So we can stop building car parks. So all that contributes to doing business as unusual, and yet this is a big shift for a lot of companies. All the martini worker needs, essentially, is a browser and something in the cloud. We're also kind of hooked on offices as well, just as a by the way. So people like offices. What are offices for? Actually, the answer is socialising. If I want to work, I go somewhere I can concentrate. Actually, offices are for socialising, networking, meeting. So that has an implication on how you design office spaces as well. A lot of what this boils down to is what I call the blobs versus squares syndrome. Now, blobs are anarchic communities. They tend to be on things like social networks. They're passionate about things like sustainability. They come together and they try and work together as groups of kind of, you know, individuals that just have common goals. And they can be very powerful blobs. Just a trivial example, obviously the Christmas number one last year was somewhat influenced by blobs. Now, most organizations don't like blobs, they like order. So organisations are squares because they have hierarchies, they have silos, they have rules, they have processes, but they also have budgets. Now the key to changing business, doing business as unusual, is to try and tap the passion, the anarchy of the blobs and marry them with the squares. And that's often quite difficult because there's different mindsets there. So how do we take the passion of a blob and actually work them together with a square? And certainly in sustainability, there's a big option to do that. The fact that people can come together, and rather than waiting for your company to do it, rather than waiting for government to say, yes, you should do this yourself, mobilize others to do it. And actually then squares often pay attention. So if you get a big enough mass of people doing stuff, squares actually sometimes then give you budgets and actually start as an initiative is a very, very good example of blobs and squares starting to work together for a common aim. But how can we do that more, given that business is a little bit resistant to blobby behavior? The future's an interesting thing. It's a very, very difficult thing to predict now because things are so fast, and certainly because we're all connected now, we're all networked. Ideas tend to travel around the world really fast, and that's both a challenge and an opportunity for businesses because most businesses are built to last rather than to change. So how do we get businesses to move into this space of business as unusual? Given that we as customers are starting to behave differently, we're behaving in a much more blobby, anarchic way. We have a number of technologies that we are starting to embrace because consumer technologies are actually a lot cheaper to buy. So we often have better devices at home than we do, the devices that we get issued to do business with. And actually, most people will then do businesses with the devices that they have at home. We don't tell the IT department this, by the way, because they don't like it much, but about 28% of us are doing that. So again, that challenges traditional things. But the good thing is that actually we have an opportunity here to perform co-created business now. Agile businesses, businesses that move really fast to actually start to solve problems that are emerging and also very fast emerging things as well. The good thing as well is that I now have a huge amount of faith in the future because I have seen the future and you guys are the future. And in fact, tapping the inspiration, the knowledge, the abilities that you all have, every one of you in this audience, is a way of moving business forward. And certainly I think, again, that's one of the powerful things about START. And I've had the pleasure of doing two events this week with START and have been absolutely overwhelmed by some of the ideas that you guys have come up with. So thank you very much for coming up with the ideas, and also thank you very much for listening.